Welcome to the Reader's Roundtable Podcast with Jessica Trotter, Mari Garza, and Cheryl Lindemann.
Welcome back to Reader's Roundtable. I'm Jessica Trotter, and I'm joined at the mic by Mari Garza and Cheryl Lindemann. And we decided to kind of, there's lots going on, but it's also Hispanic Heritage Month. So we're kind of starting there. We'll wander a bit in and out, but that's where we wanted to start today.
All right. Mari, you wanted to... So this is Mari, and I absolutely have to get all these illustrators in. I was really excited to review some of these books again. I have three illustrators and some of them authors too that I just really, really love. Angela Dominguez is one of them. You may have read Galapagos Girl. It was actually written by Marcia Diane Arnold. And it is just a beautiful, beautiful book. With lots of themes of biology and conservation and just beautiful, beautiful. The one that I have used several times, it's called Maria Had a Little Llama. It's so cute. It is a bilingual book.
Something you use for story times.
Maria tenía una, I'm not even sure if it's llamita or llamita. I want to say llamita, but I'm not sure. But it is so cute. It's sort of like a Peruvian take on Mary Had a Little Lamb.
So when you say you used them, it was for story times?
Yes. So okay. These are, I would say, maybe 2 or 3 years old, older, actually. But Angela was born in Mexico City, but she has grown up in Texas. And now I think she's living in California and does a lot of really great illustration work. She's also done like a... How do you say, or como se dice? And it's a very short, again, bilingual book that involves two giraffes that are kind of like, you know, can't understand each other, but they're like trying like, you know, comida, food. You know, they're just kind of, it's popping back and forth. Very beautiful, beautiful illustration. I have to mention Yuyi Morales. I am not that familiar with her work, but she stood out to me recently because of her book called Dreamers. It's kind of like a picture book memoir. She actually moved to the United States from Mexico when she married an American man and came over. And the story really like focuses a lot on not just children, but her experience as an adult coming and just feeling a lot of isolation. And I guess it kind of stuck with me because I've run into a lot of Mexicans in particular who, for one reason or another, end up over here and feel isolated and, you know, are trying to make their way while learning the language. Beautiful, beautiful. And her son is also prominently portrayed in that book. And the other one that she did is Thunder Boy Jr., which was written by Sherman Alexie, but illustrated by Yuyi. And this is just a really fun book about a boy who doesn't particularly like his name. It's a picture book where, you know, he's I think he's called Little Thunder Jr. And he's like going about the story, like trying to make a case, you know, from the perspective of a little child lawyer, like, look, I have this evidence that I could be this person, you know. I can't remember quite the names, like Racing Cloud or something like that. Right. It's just really, really nice. Okay, you're probably sick of me, but I probably should have started with this one first because Rafael Lopez is just one of my, just a really big illustrator that I think I'm personally drawn to because I hear a lot about his work with students. He does a lot of workshops with children all over the country. He's also from Mexico City, but now makes his home in the San Diego, California area, I think. And just his outreach to children and really trying to nurture anyone who has an interest in the arts. The one that is coming out soon, actually has come out, it's just not on our floor yet, but it will be. It's called Dancing Hands, How Teresa Carreño Played the Piano for President Lincoln. And this is based on a true story. This is a Venezuelan young child who came in the 18, before the 1860s, obviously, who actually ended up playing at the White House for Abraham Lincoln. Neat. This is a lot. I had not heard of this person, so I had to look her up. But she was a known composer, opera singer, just really, really neat. So he he's got other really great, I mean, he's worked with, you know, people like Jacqueline Woodson, The Day You Begin. He's an illustrator.
The one of my favorites.
USA Today list bestseller right now with the Supreme Court Justice, Sotomayor, Just Ask, Be Different. Really, just, he's very, very prolific. I really enjoy his work. Mm-hmm. So, okay.
Excellent. That really makes me think about so many of the picture book biographies that we have available to us now. And we can expose children to so many wonderful books through these, like Dancing Hands. When I was thinking about this podcast, one book jumped out right away to me. It is now almost 20 years old, and it is Esperanza Rising by Pam Munoz Ryan. It's hard to believe that it is almost 20 years old.
Yeah.
But this is one of those books that I can remember as if I read it yesterday.
Yeah.
And one of the most touching parts of this, it's a YA novel for about 10 and up, I would say, even a little bit younger than most YA books. But one of the most touching pieces of this story to me are that it is actually based on Pam Munoz Ryan's family history.
Mm-hmm.
Her grandmother was named Esperanza. Her mother was actually named Esperanza, and it is a fictionalized story, you know, based off of her own family history and her mother, her grandmother's journey from a very comfortable, almost extravagant life in Mexico to a Mexican labor camp in California during the Great Depression. And it really stands the test of time. It won so many awards when it came out, but it's one to go back to if you haven't discovered it, to read it with even older children or to encourage children to read it because it's just absolutely fantastic.
And I remember in that book learning, I think maybe for the first time, about how there were a lot of American citizens being of Mexican descent being deported in the 1930s back for, again, whatever issue problem was going on at the time. But I was like, wait a minute, really? Back in the 1930s? So
yeah, the afterword talks a lot about that and about the Mexican repatriation.
Just
a truly incredible book, and one that I'd like to bring back. Some of these backlist titles, they get lost, and it's worth mentioning them again. There's so many wonderful new books, but there's so much sitting on our shelves in libraries that that we need to go back to. The next thing that I wanted to bring up were two memoirs, again, over 20 years old. First one was published in 1993, written by Esmeralda Santiago. The first one is called When I Was Puerto Rican, and the second one is Almost a Woman. And these are memoirs about Ms. Santiago's experience growing up in Puerto Rico with her family. Lots of family and food memories. I can remember, even though it was over 20 years ago reading these, I can remember her home. She describes it like a tin can, basically corrugated metal, four sides with one floor, all her family under one roof with cloth separations for bedrooms. And this is the tale, or the true story, of her family living in Puerto Rico and then moving to New York, and moving many times once they got to New York, and trying to make a new life in America. And both books are really wonderful. The library system still has them, and I really encourage you to check those out.
Okay, very cool. So the interesting thing for me is, so I realized kind of a bit about myself as I was doing, you know, thinking about what I wanted to talk about for this podcast. So what I realized is that my reading habits are very, very heavily weighted to authors of Caribbean descent and almost completely of Cuban descent. So before I get started, I want to just say a shout out to my half Cuban roommate who has clearly half Cuban college roommate who Ariana, you have definitely influenced my reading habits. Thanks, bunches. No, it's really funny because you kind of look back and see, what do these all have in common? Yep, that's part of it right there. The person I thought of first when I decided I wanted to do this is, I don't know if any of you, either of you, have read anything by Daniel Jose Older, but he is somebody who, who's become a major advocate for writers of color in the publishing industry, and he writes for all ages. He's got The Dactyl Squad series just started. It's a children's picture book, chapter book series. He's got an urban fantasy series, the Bone Street Rumba series that starts with Half Resurrection Blues, that's been out for years. And he's written for Star Wars. He wrote Longshot, which was a lead-in to the Solo movie. And then he's done, I'm actually currently reading a book that's coming out in November that's probably his most realistic book that he's written so far, in the sense that it's still magic realism. It's a family saga about a family who's come out of Cuba, mm-hmm. And settled in New York, and it's narrated by one of three sisters who is dead. Yeah, so there is that little bit to it. It's still a very realistic family story, and talking about immigration and adjustments and that sort of thing. But the book that my favorite so far series by him is his Shadow Shaper series, which is a teen series. And it's an urban fantasy teen series. It's features a girl named Sierra, who's a brilliant artist, on the streets of Bed-Stuy. She is a graffiti artist. And just as her summer's starting, her whole world is changing. She has gifts. Her graffiti art can come to life. Ooh. There's magic into it. She's inherited through her family. She's seeing murals crying. She's seeing mm-hmm. ghosts. She's seeing other things. It's a disturbing and it's a creepy read, and it's just something that I really, really enjoyed. Mm. And then as I was kind of getting ready for this, I'm looking around and think, this is the first time I ever realized, just something came out on Twitter because there's been an announcement. I don't know if you're familiar with there's a BBC series called Orphan Black. Mm-hmm. It's starting a new series. The new showrunner for the series is a woman named Malka Older, who is his sister.
Ah,
And is a noted science fiction writer on her own, too. So it's just it's cool to see a family doing great. And so that's one that I really wanted to make sure we talked about. Another one that I wanted to talk about was Carmen Maria Machado. Her Body and Other Parties is a book of short stories that came out in 2017 and won all kinds of things, and it was shortlisted for the National Book Award. It won the Shirley Jackson Award. There was a story up for the Nebula in it. They're creepy. They're macabre. We classified it as horror. If you like Kelly Link, if you like Angela Carter, if you like Helen Oyeyemi, they look at the lengths we do. They're mostly looking at women. There's a definite queer bent to a lot of the stories. It looks at things we do for the perfect body, which are horrible. There's a weird kind of set of linked stories that she basically took the title of, I don't know how many Law & Order SVU episodes and sort of wrote a really creepy backstory for Benson and Sabler. And then there's a new take on I think it's a European folktale, ultimately, though I couldn't find anything that said, but there's a story of a girl with a green ribbon that I think I read in an Alvin Schwartz kids book. So not Scary Stories, but one of his other books. And it's just this really creepy story of a girl who has a green ribbon and she won't let anybody touch it. And it goes way left. So I won't continue on it.
Sounds vaguely familiar. Yeah.
It's a story. It's one of those things I was kind of looking around. I couldn't figure out where it originated.
Yeah.
But there is an Alvin Schwartz story. And it's a very creepy picture book.
That's probably how.
But I'm also, so this book is fabulous. It's beautifully, beautifully written. And I'm really, really interested. She's got a memoir coming out about a horrible relationship. But it's looking at, again, how we get into those things, how we can't get out of those things, how we finally do. It's called In the Dream House, and it's getting amazing reviews. There's a lot of hot memoirs coming out this fall, but that one's, and it's always in that list when people say that. So I'm just really looking forward to getting a hold of it, and it's due out in November.
Yep, it's on order.
I know, and it is holdable, yes.
Okay.
Who wants to go next?
Excellent. Well, my last book that I want to mention is The Caring by Ada Limon. And when preparing for this, I thought about, you know, it's really interesting how we find books and how the right book finds you sometimes.
Yeah.
I was going home from an appointment just listening to NPR, and I heard Tess Taylor, poet on NPR, talking about...
That was awesome.
About a poetry. This was a piece about recommended poetry reads for the holidays. And I heard this segment, and there was a little snippet of a poem by Ada Limon in there. And I couldn't believe it. You know, I wanted to write it down, but I was driving. I'm like, Ada Limon, keep it in your mind till you get back. And I tracked her down right away. Well, then I saw Ada Limon everywhere. That's how it seems to work.
Yes. Oh, totally.
Right.
Definitely.
It just comes, you're like, wow. So I subscribe to the Academy of American Poets Facebook page. Subscribe, and I highly recommend that for everyone. If you're at all interested in poetry, you get, you know, poetry every day in your feed. You can get emails to you of a poem a day. And of course, an Ada Limon poem came through, and I thought, oh my gosh, where have I been? How did I not know about this poet? And so then I went and got her book as soon as I could. And she has 5 books. One of them was nominated for a National Book Award. But The Carrying is her most recent book, published in 2018. And when I picked up the book, I felt like, again, I can't believe I'm discovering this author. It's just too wonderful. The poem that Ada Limon chose to use in the introduction is a poem by Joy Harjo, one of my other favorite poets. So it's all coming together. I'm thinking, I can't believe this
book. It is amazing how that works.
Yeah, everything is just coming together. And of course, it's about horses, which, again, is too much. But Ada Limon's poetry, I don't really want to say too much about the content and the detail, because I think poetry is so intimate. It's a personal experience between you and the poems themselves.
Well said. Yeah. Wow.
So I don't want to give too much away, and you may love it, you may not, but the poems are really touch on animals, plants, nature, grief, illness, infertility, inclusivity versus tokenism, womanhood, ordinary moments, resilience, and then reconciling darkness and light. The book is tender, it's beautiful, it's intimate, but like the best of poetry, it provides that space for your own reflection. And Ada Limon, in her interviews, which again are like reading poems, reading any interview by her, every word that comes out of her mouth is beautiful. But she's really trying to provide that experience of that people see themselves in her poems. Hmm. So it works. It comes through. I was so moved by reading this book of poetry that I actually put a little note on her Facebook page, and she wrote back to me right away, which I thought was also really
nice.
Wonderful. Yeah. So it's I really can't recommend it enough. It's Dandelions, Goldfinches, Despair, and Triumph. It's all in this book. So.
Wow. So I went to, I was in Tijuana, Mexico earlier this summer, or this past summer. And I've always been very interested in the work of Luis Alberto Urrea. And as I was just kind of poking around our catalog to see if I could find some interesting books about Tijuana, I found the Tijuana Book of the Dead. It's a book of poems by Luis Alberto Urrea. We've had him with Michigan State. Cattle has had him as an author. He's written really, really interesting fiction that I love reading. But this, I was really drawn to a lot of the poems, including the title poem of this book. But the one that I was especially drawn to, at least when I was looking at it earlier this week, it's called Fall Rain. And it's kind of, I guess, appropriate, because I'm really glad that we've had the rain lately. But the end of that poem, "Can you rain inside my chest?" And just all sorts of pictures of, like, wow, having your heart needing a good drenching or something inside, mm-hmm. having rain come in. So, yeah, that's my poetry.
Awesome. That's very cool. I've got one more. Actually, it's new this fall. Actually, maybe came out last month, maybe in August. There's a book called Gods of Jade and Shadow by Sylvia Moreno-Garcia, and it's really a neat story that plays with Mexican folklore. She's of Mexican descent. And at Cassiopeia Tan, dreams of getting away from an oppressive and abusive family. Her father's gone. The family didn't approve of the merit, her mother's marriage. Her mother's sort of a drudge in the kitchen, and Cassie is basically just running errands for everybody and not being well treated. So everybody's out one day, and she's supposed to be cleaning up, and she ends up kind of straightening things in her grandfather's closet and finds this box, which she opens, and it happens to be the prison of a Mexican god. The god of the underworld, the Mayan god of death, has been hanging out in a box, trapped by his brother and her grandfather for all of this time. And he is on a quest to regain his throne, and he's taking her with. And she's very uncomfortable with the idea. She wanted out, but she wasn't sure she wanted out quite this way. But it's a really neat, it's part coming-of-age story, part, you know, folklore quest. There's a little teeny bit of romance, but it's just, and sacrifice and adventure. And it's a really neat, well-written story. It's always refreshing to see something other than the gods that everybody plays with and uses in fantasy folklore, and it's done by somebody who knows what they're doing. So
yeah,
I think it was a fun book. So that's The Gods of Jade and Shadow by Silvia Moreno Garcia. So we also have did anybody have any other books that they wanted to talk about just for this particular topic, or I think we had other stuff.
First, I want to salute local people around our Greater Lansing area.
Yes.
Tony Cervantes, who is known as El Chayo. He is a radio host on WKAR locally. This guy has been running a Spanish language, maybe bilingual you could call it, I'm not sure, with a lot of Spanish news, music, Tejano music. That's just really awesome. Thank you for being a Hispanic, I guess, leader in the community and for bringing light to that music. I also want to just give a shout out to a librarian at MSU, former librarian, I believe, Deanna Rivera, who was responsible, I don't know if I should say responsible, heavily involved in curating the Cesar Chavez collection at MSU Libraries.
Very cool.
Another Hispanic hero in our area. And then our very own Andrea Rodriguez. She's a library assistant at the Okemos branch, and this woman is so involved in our community. She has done many, many things in her very long career, but what really stands out to me is her work with the neighborhood and Crystal Ray, also in Lansing, where she's currently just running class after class after class on just helping people to get up to where they want to be digitally, being able to use a computer, being able to learn various software systems. So I just really appreciate her example to our community. And I have to bring up one more book.
Okay.
It's called Bravo, Poems About Amazing Hispanics. And this is actually by Margarita Engel, which I have failed to mention. She's also a great Cuban author, but illustrated by Rafael Lopez. And it focuses on 18 different leaders with some Hispanic American maybe heritage, and both of those books are currently on display at the Okemos Library right now. That doesn't mean you cannot check them out. Head over there if you want to take a look at that. So
Okay, so I know there's some other outside books that people wanted to talk about today. You want to start, Cheryl?
Sure. I have a funny one.
I know what's coming.
This has been a hit at our house with my 7-year-old, and it's Llama Destroys the World by Jonathan Stutzman. This is a story of Llama and how he destroys the world, and he does it in the most innocent way. He has no idea what he's doing. He's just having a good time. He is the cutest llama you can imagine, with giant eyes. My daughter loves this book. She's memorized the book. It makes her laugh over and over and over. We've been reading it every night. We've read it under the moonlight and outdoor story time. She's brought it to school. She narrates it on the swings, on the playground.
I love it.
This book is a hit. This book is it's just fantastic. And then the book that I am going to read next, and I'm just desperate to have some time to read and sit and actually focus on, came out last year. It's called Small Animals, Parenthood in the Age of Fear by Kim Brooks. That is my next read, and I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah. So I'm currently reading The Lonely Dead. It's by April Henry. It's a YA book or young adult novel fiction. It's came out earlier this year, and it's set in Portland, Oregon. And there's lots of imagery about, you know, the forest, which is probably one of my favorite parts. They have all these parks that kind of make you feel like you're hiking somewhere in the middle of nowhere, but actually you are in a city. And this is a story about Adele and her kind of estranged friend, Tori, who kind of ends up dead, and Adele finds her, or the ghost of her. And the way she can tell that she is now dead is that she's got this, like, misty silver cord that is kind of coming out of her back. And she's and Tori initially doesn't believe she's dead, but it's a mystery where Adele has to go out and find out who did it. And these two girls are sort of estranged. They're in high school, and they're a bit estranged. Like, one of them, they were childhood friends, and then, you know, you drift away, and maybe there was a riff or something that kept them apart. Wow. But what I find really interesting about it is that Adele has a history of schizophrenia. So she's got a grandfather who's really, really invested in trying to keep her healthy, keep her on her medication. And so it's this story of trying to figure out, are these hallucinations or is this really a ghost story? And I'm kind of surprised that I'm still with it and committed to reading the last 25 pages that I have left to go. That it's kind of a hokey pokey ghost story, and I don't usually like those stories, but this one I really like.
All right.
So I would also say that even though it's a YA book, it is also a really good read. I think would appeal to some middle schoolers out there. That's The Lonely Dead by April Henry.
Okay, one of the ones I wanted to talk about, I'm a little ahead of its release date, but it's The Water Dancer, and this is Ta-Nehisi Coates's first full fiction novel. I was desperate to get a hold of this early. I was able to get a hold of this early and get through it. And it's due out on September 24th. It's certainly holdable now. And it's just, it's a really beautiful book, but it's a tough subject. It is a book on slavery. It's different than any I've read. That sort of tackle, it's a different angle for tackling the story or tackling the issue of slavery. It focuses on a young man named Hiram Walker, who's, he refers to the enslaved as the Tast, who is the son of a slave woman and their master. He is gifted with a perfect memory, but it starts basically from the day his mother is sold off. He doesn't remember his early childhood. But that's gift kind of puts him, that gift and sort of the accident of he's the son of the actual slave owner gives him a little bit of a step up in the community. And he's sort of raised alongside a half brother to basically be his right hand man. But that doesn't quite work out the way everybody intends. There's, if you can apply magic realism outside of Hispanic literature, there's a touch of this going on in this book, too. But what's really interesting is it's just a really perceptive look at the lives of the enslaved and the owners in the late 1850s. This is just ahead of the Civil War. As tobacco crops are kind of drying up in Virginia, they've just overworked the land. They're not listening to the people that know how to do this kind of farming well enough. They just worked it for the money as fast as they could and as hard as they could. And it looks like sort of that the trap of slavery for the slave owner, too. I mean, they sort of screwed themselves up on top of being kind of horrible enslavers. They've screwed themselves up by not really understanding what they were doing to the land, not listening to the people who knew what they were doing and could stop it, compounding the problem by selling people away. It has parts that looks at the Underground Railroad. It just has a lot of really moving and interesting characters. And then there's a touch of magic in there, too. And it's just one of those things I think everybody should read. It's just a really good book. And he's just such a great writer. Between the World and Me, is if you haven't gone and read that, that would be a shorter take of something to read on race and contemporary race issues. But this one just, I told them if I gushed too long to stop me, but this is just one of those ones that I really think everybody should get a hold of.
I agree.
It's gush worthy.
Yes. I agree. I picked up The Ark, which is kind of like an advanced reader copy that we get access to, and I did not finish it yet, but I do have it on hold, so I plan to finish it. And I was really,
it's just
really
a
liking.
Really powerful read.
Yeah.
And because that's a book on slavery, I'm going to give you one more that's not. I happened to just finish a book called Hunter's Moon by Philip Caputo. And he's a Pulitzer winner for his autobiography, but this is a linked set of short stories set in the UP.
Oh.
Following a group of recurring characters. It's kind of haunting. These characters sort of weave in and out of each other's lives. It is a book of short stories, but they are linked and there's common characters between them. It's called a novel in short stories on the cover. But it deals with the issues between fathers and sons. It deals with desperation in a small community, in a small Stark community in the UP. But it's people from all levels. There's a lawyer who comes in and out for hunting season. There's the most central character is the owner of the local bar, who is a vet. It deals with PTSD. It deals with hunting culture. It deals with high school buddies and how that works after you're well out of high school. Occasional lovers. It's just a strange, lovely, sometimes stark, sometimes jolting. There may be only about 6 or 7 stories, but they're just really well done. So this is something else for people to find.
All right.
All right. I thank you. And we'll be back with more to read.
All right. Excellent. Happy fall. Sort of.